Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. I just went to my happy place. I just went to Maui, and it was truly amazing. Priceline has always been about getting you to your happy place for a happy price, with deals you really can't find anywhere else, like up to 60% off select hotels in Costa Rica or five-star hotels for two-star prices in Cabo.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing crickets at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called the Nimbus Kid.
Obviously, sharing's always a big issue. A big issue for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
Tangle's like a witness league.
A bit of advice for the player, yeah. Sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
It's a spicy, spicy week in the world of world cricket. What on earth went down there at Old Trafford or didn't go down? Cancellation? Forfeiture? I don't know. You decide. Was it the IPL? Shastri, the book launch should go big. That book should go big. Australia, Afghanistan, are we going to play that? Wouldn't have thought so. Tim Payne's getting some neck surgery. Phil Walker from Wisden is on the show, as is Dirk Nannis, to make sense of all of these things before we get into hashtag RCGC. This episode is brought to you by Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com. Use the code CHAMP at checkout, for goodness sake. My name is Ian Higgins. Sam Perry sits across from me, and in many ways, I him. Good morning to you, Pezzy lad. What a week it's been.
Mate, good morning to you as well, and good morning or afternoon, evening to the listener out there who is no doubt tuned in to receive the correct and politically appropriate and accurate take on all of these issues. What are we talking about? We're talking about rational actors across cricket administrations. We're talking about global affairs, Afghanistan sovereignty, Nick Hockley's ability to influence that.
That's right.
And Payne on his SEN show.
That's right, the Australian captain on his radio
show. Can he move his neck when he's talking to Jack Rewalt?
Now, yeah, people are sitting at home being like, I haven't made up my mind just yet because I want them to put it to me in grade terms. What does all this mean? Can you put the Taliban to me in grade terms? Hey, but before we get into that, Pez, the biggest story of the week.
Yes.
Not sure if you saw this. Cameroon, Uganda.
Yeah.
16-year-old Sima Mavuduma dismissed 4 Uganda batters as they backed up at the non-strikers end in the Women's T20 World Cup Africa Region qualifier in Botswana, one of the biggest qualifiers. Have you seen the footage?
I have.
Absolute scenes.
Fucking great.
I mean, like I've thought about this for a period of time about the man cads or the running out the non-strikers end or whatever the correct thing to say it is. And I'm like, yeah, okay, one. I'm like, nah, no good. After the fourth, I'm like, maybe some blame should go to the non-strikers. Mate, some.
I agree with you. You know, whenever you see a man cad that goes viral on the internet, it then sparks a conversation about the whys and wherefores of the man cad.
Yeah.
Everyone takes up their trench warfare position.
That's right.
Ours has been, because we do everything together, right?
Yeah.
We're holding hands right now. Like we've had reservations about the man cat, just to say quickly, mine are twofold. You know, one, I think the result is disproportionate to the crime, though I don't hold that too closely because the crease is fundamental property in cricketers against flaws. And two, my main one is that like man cat evangelists,
yeah,
they love talking about it, but you'd scarcely find an exponent among them. And it causes me to suspect that many people love the idea and the identity of the man cad, but in club cricket games, how many do they have to their name? Would you do it? I think these people have been waiting for a daddy to make it okay, right? You know, someone needs to lead it off. Oh, daddy, you're doing it. I'll do it too. And we actually thought Ashwin would be our daddy.
Yeah, we thought so.
But it turns out we needed a mummy, and that mummy is a 16-year-old Cameroonian Seema, Mava Duma.
Mava.
Because when I saw those man cats, I thought it was fucking great.
Yeah.
At least Mava Duma is, what do you say? Putting their money where their mouth is.
Fucking,
the old footy tab ad.
100%.
She ain't talking. She's doing it.
Yeah.
She's walking the talk.
Yeah, 100%. And the celebration.
And so fair play. She comes, that's a fucking run out, baby.
Yep.
See you later.
Yep.
And smashing those stumps too. It.
And then wheeling away and then doing like the NBA celebration. They all jump up and like touch each other's hips.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So I say fair play. If you're going to do it, fucking do it. Don't talk about it. Now, and so respect.
Now let's talk about the score from the game. Which was Uganda batted first and had 190 for six, four of which were mancads, so pretty flat deck. Cameroon all out 35. But the big win from the day, Dooms, Fofa.
Exactly. Stat padding.
Okay, Pez. England, India, fifth test at Old Trafford will long live in the memory until they reschedule this, which may never happen. Before we speak to Phil Walker from Wisdom, we got sort of we had a good chat about not necessarily what it means, but trying to get some like on the ground action. And Phil was in he was at the Oval watching Alistair Cook score 160 or whatever for Essex against Surrey. But how this all went down was, well, we started to get wind of it because we were about to do a live stream for day one. We still did that, I suppose, but it was less ball by ball action.
Less.
there was still some. we're covering Uganda, Cameroon. But there was some. I'm trying to get the timeline of it correct myself. I believe it was midnight the night before. The players have signed something to give to the BCCI to say we ain't playing. But then it got to the next morning, and it wasn't until 90 minutes beforehand before the scheduled first ball of the game was officially called off. I suppose there's some prelude before that, and that Ravi Shastri is holding a book launch where 150 members of the public also attended. Yeah.
Well, they're trying to work out where the COVID kind of started. And Ravi Shastri's got a book launch called Stargazing. Hell of a book, too.
Hell of a book.
I'm going to try and get him on. But he's patient X. He gets COVID. A couple other get it. But, you know, Coley's there and Tom Harrison, the ECB CEO's there. But that's where they reckon the COVID started. Yeah. And it starts going through the team and the physio gets it and the physio's been touching everyone. And the players go, you know, that's no good. We reckon this is going to sweep through.
Mm-hmm.
Got health concerns with it, and I think fair enough. And I think worried about our families getting it as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had a pragmatic issue of getting to the IPL, which we're going to touch on later, and all the issues that sort of, you know, sit underneath that. But they decided, not doing it, eh?
There's so much underneath all of this, which is, we don't even know what's true and stuff, I read that originally the BCCI had told the ECB that this function they were going to was a team dinner, but it was a book launch involving other members of the public, but also Tom Harrison, the head of the ECB, was there. So how much that is true seems wildly inaccurate. But should we speak to Phil and then come back to
us? Talk to Phil.
Okay, here is his Phil Walker from Wisdom.
All right, now this man is recently married and has that post-nuptial glow, actually, as I can see down the screen. Yeah, look at that ring, baby. He's also got an unbelievable left foot too from a five-a-side game I played with him many years ago. And least importantly, but most relevant to this, is that he's editor-in-chief of the Wisden Cricket Monthly, the Wisden Cricket Monthly, I should say, a venerable publication that also produces the Wisden Cricket Podcast, which is a great listen too. I'm talking about Phil Walker. Phil, welcome to the Grey Cricketer, your debut.
Yeah, thank you, mate. That was a stunner. Thank you very much. And cheers for the nod on the left foot as well. It's a little bit out of practice, but on its day, it writes a Russian novel, this culture of the left foot. So thank you for bringing that to everyone's attention.
Oh, I'm going to do it because, well, frankly, and it's, I guess it's like damned with faint praise, but most cricket journos are completely uncoordinated and suck at sport. Yeah. So when we played football that time a few years ago, I was extremely impressed.
Thank you, mate.
And I'll be the judge of that. Well, look, for those who are watching on YouTube as well, let's get the elephant out of the room. Where are you and what are you watching? Can you just give us a score update? Because as cricket fans, we just need to know what's going on, if there's an actual game going on behind someone.
361 for four, or rather 4 for 361, Essex against Surrey in the meaningless tier two fag end of the county season, going through the motions, pointlessness. But Alistair Cook, bless him, has rescued a bit of a dud year for the man with 156 knots so far. He's still going strong. It's another flat one in South London. There's maybe, to be honest, the crowd's not bad for a Monday. There's probably 600 or 700 people here. Ricky Clark, soon to be retired, he's running in from the pavilion end, and no one seems to really give a toss one way or the other. But there we go, folks. That's county cricket for you. Moves on to 157 now, Alistair.
Oh, thanks.
157, Sir Alistair.
Phil, so we're recording Monday evening here in Australia, which is 3 days after learning about the cancellation or forfeiture or postponement of the fourth test. Fifth test. And so we've all had a chance to breathe a little bit. Like, if it's possible, can you try and reflect the mood in English cricket? Like, is there an abiding view on what happened and what it means, or does that just depend on one's particular brand of politics and the media one subscribes to?
You've hit it. You've hit the nail on the head. A shit show of real purity, a real sort of classic of the genre, this one, isn't it? And monstrous ramifications on all sides. From the ECB, which is now terrified of falling into complete disrepair financially. From the BCCI, who themselves may be hit in the pocket, although their pockets are somewhat deeper than the ECB's. From that special relationship, so-called, you know, between a kind of fading old empire and then thrusting new imperialists and all of that. The two of them locked in this kind of uncomfortable marriage, but one of mutual benefit, and that relationship is now hanging by a thread. Then there's knock-on effect of what happens in your summer in a couple of months' time, and you know, those murmurs and rumours around the Ashes are not going away, and I would say what's happened in the last few days can only reinforce that sense of anxiety around it and a bit of paranoia in there as well, I fear. But yeah, where do you start? Many have said this was the moment. This was the moment when, you know, the test game was finally shunted off its pedestal for good, you know, and it was sacrificed at the altar of player power and short-term commerce, and of course, you know, the hoary old T20 game. Now, I think it's very simplistic to say, well, the IPL was beckoning and the players, you know, were prioritising that. I think it's a bit simplistic to say that. The human reality from the Indian players' perspective is that they were there. They've been in England forever. They've been over here since May. And when I speak in the present tense, they have now left, incidentally, and they're all settled in where they need to be. With, of course, the IPL starting this coming weekend. So, as we know, Sourav Ganguly et al. Were desperate to try and mark this test match off the calendar, get rid of it. They weren't able to reach that agreement. And so there is a kind of gnawing sense of convenience, sure, that this game didn't get played. But there are all kinds of legitimate mitigating circumstances around it, I think. And you know, you can't escape the point that India's physiotherapist caught the bug and was working physically on these players, hand to hand, in their faces, literally, and that this was the backdrop to this final game. Now, there would have been every possibility that a COVID case could have then emerged in the test match itself two days in, multiple players potentially, and then it's complete and utter carnage. So they're the excuses. They are the mitigating circumstances. Before we start sort of firing wild shots and apportioning blame, a word for the punters, man. The punters, it literally called off 2 hours before the game, right? Now, we are desperate to sell the game, desperate to convince people that this is a game still worth following. And in our country, we've actually done pretty well on that in the last year or two. For all the ins and outs of the 100 and all that bollocks, we are getting more people watching the game and more people engaged with the game than we've had for a long time. So there's some progress in that space as Tom Harrison would say to you. So to then turn around and treat people with such contempt as this, why the game couldn't have been called off the night before, at least. You know, you had these kind of queues of penguins and nuns and Daffy Ducks and this, that and the other, all sort of drinking themselves into oblivion around the flesh pots of Manchester because they didn't have a game to go to. People booking hotels that suddenly, and they can't get refunds, or they can only get partial refunds. People who have booked in their whole weekends for this finale to what had been, with savage irony, a great series. You know, devastating, really, for the individuals involved. And it sends out a very nasty message. Not everybody is kind of embroiled in the nuances of the game and the kind of socioeconomic realities of boards versus boards and against one another. They just want to go and see a game of cricket, right? And people save up for it, and they block out a weekend in late summer to go and do this. And then they just get turfed out literally on the morning of the game. People queuing up. There were people still in the ground, by the way. They came in, and you know, the meat and two veg shops, you know, and the stalls, they were still running. So people were just still sitting in their seats, you know, having a beer and eating their pies, almost, you know, refusing to accept the grim reality of it. Overall, the feeling is one of sadness and a massive missed opportunity, because now this series just has this big black asterisk next to it. And no one wanted that. On a global level, but on a micro level as well, because it's captured something this summer, and now we have to dredge through all the shit to try and make some sense of it. And what a shame! What a shame that we're here.
Do you have a sense, Phil, of what the English players, how they feel about it? I mean, I note that young Johnny Bairstow, Darwin Milan, and Chris Wokes have all pulled out of the second leg of the IPL. That'll show them. Chris Wokes won't be able to play some games for Delhi. Like that'll get some of the £40 million lost back or something. But do you get a sense of what the English players were feeling, or maybe still are feeling a few days on?
Pretty perplexed, pretty furious, and that sense that this was their chance to try and balance the books a little bit, and and it's been ripped away from them. Of course. If we're talking about the ethics of this, then famously, infamously, they walked away from a South Africa tour last year in the midst of COVID, and there were differences. You know, the vaccine, of course, wasn't out at the time. There was more paranoia and anxiety around what this thing was doing on an individual level. The savage irony there, of course, is that those tests that came through positive for England in South Africa were actually in the end false positives, and so nobody actually had the thing. Now India do have two cases that have been reported, obviously Shastri and then the physio. So they do have cases, and then there's a tendency to throw the book at them. So I'm not sure really that stands up. I've spoken about this before. Obviously we had the ODI side having to be, the England ODI side having to be replaced literally overnight to fulfill a series against Pakistan earlier this summer. And we were saying at the time, what the South Africa thing comes home to roost in the end. It's only a matter of time before it comes home to roost. And there is that sense that this was this occasion. But in answer to your question, the England players are spitting because they still had a game to win and they had a series to draw, and they have a very proud home record, six years undefeated before New Zealand turned them over earlier this summer. And there's been a lot of needle as well between the two teams this summer as well. So, pretty pissed off, I think is probably an understatement. And especially for Joe Root as well, you know, who's carried this team on his back. You saw him glued to his phone all morning and afternoon on the Friday, and then traipsing out, you know, hunched shoulders, looking pretty down. And he deserved more on a human level. He deserved one last hit, you know. So yeah, a really, really, really nasty state of affairs, I have to be honest.
There's a lot of news hounds, Phil, who have been working hard to uncover detail on the specific events that led to the decision on Friday. I know that's not you. with respect, I know that's not where you come into play. You know, pretend to. But I know you mentioned this earlier. Like for those who work in cricket every day, you know, the raw exercise of power by the BCCI is actually par for the course, and those people may be desensitized to it or pragmatically accepting of it as something that actually comes with the territory. In fact, it may even be a mature perspective in a way that this is how rational actors work. As someone who, so it's not a judgment on it necessarily, but so as someone who chronicles the game, like, do you think fans in England share that view or are sensitized to that view, or is this the first time English cricket itself had sort of viscerally tasted the feeling of being beta to Indian cricket's alpha, if you will? I know there have been examples in the past, but this was dramatic in the sense that it was on home soil in England, playing England's brand of cricket, which was Test cricket, you know, at the denouement of a series.
Yeah, brilliant question. That push and pull between the old empire and the new superpower has been very evident for a few years now. And you're right, the fact that it was on home soil, I think that's key. You know, don't mess with our program. I think there'll be an element of that here, for sure. A sense that the kind of hegemonic power that India exerts has now spread all the way over into our own turf. And we know from a financial perspective how much the game has been struggling worldwide, but even these kind of supposedly big pals inoculated from financial stress, well, English cricket has lost a hell of a lot of money. It's also managed to pilfer away a fair amount of money as well. But that's probably a side issue. The fact is that the financial ramifications now are immense. And it was interesting to hear Tom Harrison, who's not a man who encourages sympathy easily, I would say, but you could see him squirming, trying to explain that this is not a COVID cancellation. Mr. Insurance Man, listen, this is not a COVID cancellation. This is mental health issues determined by the threat of COVID. Riddle me that one. I mean, mental gymnastics required to get through that one. But what he's saying is, if this was a COVID cancellation, English cricket, and by extension, Lancashire as well, they don't get shit. They don't get any money at all. And so they are desperately trying to double think their way out of this to try and at least ensure that they can get something out of it. There is now this talk about next year, and this is incredibly, this is very BCCI. They're saying, okay, next summer, 2022, you can either have, this was the reports this morning in the Daily Mail, Lawrence Booth, you can either have two T20s or one test match next summer to cover your costs. But if that does happen, then that test match can't be a part of the existing series. So it has to just be a standalone, like the 77 centenary game or something like that. Just a completely random 5-dayer, purely to pay the coffers, purely to swerve the issues around COVID insurance, just to get it done. And if there's ever a kind of more neat summary of how ballsed up the modern game is and how utterly enthralled to money it is, then here you have it. Here you have it. One game lopped off, added next year, but not in any context whatsoever. So they've got good. A choice of that or two T20s. Yeah, it does sound great. Yeah. I'll tune in. Anyway. Meanwhile, Alistair Cook, 165, not out now, by the way.
And that will remain relevant when this podcast comes out. Actually,
sure.
We're actually going to release this next year. It's actually a preview for that game next year. So I'm looking forward to that. Jadeja, will he play? Will he bat 7 or 5? Who knows? I mean, how likely do you think that reschedule is? And also, if I can tack on another question to that, I know that the BCCI and the ACB discussed playing this fifth test match. This would have been the first test match, but then they didn't want to play that because of the 100 finals, etc. So the ACB are a bit now like, well, that was a mistake.
Well, yeah. Yeah. The schedule's a mess, as everybody knows. It's packed to the rafters and then some. Right. That has to be dealt with again next year and in the ensuing years. Yeah, I wouldn't say you reap what you sow. I think that would be harsh on the ECB. Mm-hmm. But there was always this precariousness around this summer. There was always this sense of, look, let's just try and get to the end of it without any more balls ups. And then we end up with this. I don't think this was driven on India's part by the dark arts. But I think the cards landed in a certain way that they were able to play them. I might get it in the net for that, but that's my reading of it. As I said earlier, I have a fair degree of sympathy for the individuals involved who have been over in England since May, living in these kind of half bubbles. Family members are over here. Pujara's family was here. Sharma's family was here. I think that all of that has to act legitimately be taken into account, because it would be if the roles were reversed. And the bosses over here have been very, very keen to say these bubbles, even these mini bubbles, are unsustainable. They're unsustainable. Owen Morgan said it. Tom Harrison said it. It's unsustainable. So there is a human element to all of this, as well as the real politic of you know, what the BCCI may or may not have been playing. Tricky.
Who's out?
Anyway. He's gone. He's gone 320 balls, 165, 20-24s. Yeah, well, Batticook. He's dragged it back.
Last one. Last one from me, Phil. So where to from here for the England men's team? So there's reports, and you mentioned this earlier again, that there could be a knock-on effect for the Ashes, and that's all underlined by the sad truth, or so it seems, that whether you try to run or hide, as our country does, or take it on, as other countries do, COVID will get you one way or another. Like, how real are the reservations England players are reported to have about the Ashes, and do we have any choice but to shrug our shoulders and say, fair enough? And finally, if they do make it out here, do you join the rest of your colleagues in regrettably accepting a chin music laden 5-0 series defeat?
Well, I'll come to the last bit first. I've had three tours of duty, and the best I had was that dirge of a game at Melbourne when Cook battered you into a draw. All the rest of it, literally seen defeat after defeat after defeat. Yeah, I don't like it down your way. Got to be honest, it's too hot, it's too aggressive and too powerful and too big. Everyone's big, everyone's massive. Even the small people like you, Sam, they're still a bit big. I don't like it.
Okay. Wait till you see me this summer.
But no, of course I'll be there, ready for another spanking. Given half a chance. Will it happen? Well, these rumours are not going away. I think there is a power struggle taking place, for sure. But the England players, certainly some of them, certainly the multi-format players at the top of the game, they're not going to be dictated to on this anymore. And they will argue, with a degree of legitimacy, we have flogged ourselves for 2 years through this virus. And if you compare, say, to the Australian team, and this is not a criticism in any way, but the Australian side have played, what, a handful of ODIs all year? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So they have been broadly cosseted from these bubbles and so on, whereas the England players and the Indians as well, to be fair, they have been dragged from venue to venue, pillar to post, for our delectation, for our enjoyment. For all that the Ashes is the Ashes, if one of them, one or two of them, or three or four of them turn around and say, look, I cannot face this anymore, then there will not be a lack of sympathy for them, okay? There really won't be. There is no lack of sympathy for Ben Stokes, who's taken an enforced time out of the game, missed the whole of the India series, is missing the T20 World Cup in October, may well be missing more cricket after that as well. There is no lack of sympathy for him. Just as there would, no books would be thrown at Joss Butler if he turns around and says, do you know what, this is another party too far for me, you know. This is the reality, and people can say, well, they're mollycoddled, this is the Ashes, you should be turning out and doing what you have to do. Well, I don't think we live in that world anymore, really. The knock-on question, I suppose, is if England can only persuade a certain number of players, then do we accept a kind of, you know, Kerry Packer style, you know, Ashes wipeout when we go and when we beat you 5-1 that time when you didn't have a team out? Or do we say, okay, look, let's be pragmatic, let's postpone this thing until a better day? You know more about this than I do, about where Australian government and by extension CA are and how much flex they're going to have in the end. You'll know better than I. So what is the answer? Is there going to be any leeway, any deviation?
5-0, you beauty.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that the first thing to say is that, like, India brought their C team out last time and they did okay against us.
It was a good series.
So, yeah, it was really good. So, you know, don't be too afraid. Don't be too afraid of that. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like in Australia, we are very isolationist and protectionist and zero risk with everything we do. But paradoxically, I feel like our government is so populist that they wouldn't dare not put the ashes on. That, you know, they have a way of making both things true. They have a way of making both things true.
So England are asking for resort style exclusivity, aren't they? That's essentially what their requirements are, and for as much presence of their families as possible. And if that's not delivered for them, then they might kick their heels in and not come. My guess, for what it's worth, is that in the end, come Brisbane in late November, we'll toss up, we'll win it, we'll make the wrong decision, get beaten 4 days with as strong a side as we can put out. And that's my guess. In the end, market forces and the push and pull of cricket diplomacy will be such that I think we'll get it on. But I don't think it's absolutely a stick on. And I've thought it has been for a couple of months. But then the more I read about the kind of proud intransigence of your system, you know, and this being a kind of world leader in COVID fundamentalism and all of that, I wonder if the unimaginable does actually play out in the end. We shall see. I don't know. If it does go on, then I'll be there anyway.
There's no doubt that there will be focus groups at the moment trying to, you know, the government will be commissioning focus groups to try and work out what plays more with voters. Us being obsessed with our borders and Fortress Australia, or like Steve Smith scoring 100 against Chris Wokes. And like, it's going to be close, you know, and whichever one comes up trumps, let's just hope those focus groups turn up Smithy, you know?
Yeah.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Because I mean, you know, the game needs it, is desperate for it. And obviously your cricket has lost a lot of money as well. You know, it has to happen, doesn't it, really? You know, from an existential perspective, really. English cricket's on its knees financially, and your boys are going to be hit hard as well, you know. We shall see. Not so much safe living as assisted dying at the minute, it feels. But, you know, hopefully we can get this done.
All feeling and anyway. Sounding pretty good. Phil Walker, thanks so much for joining us, mate. Wonderful debut. I'm sure that left peg will keep you in good stead. Post-nuptial glow is fantastic. Cheers, mate. We'll catch you next time.
Cheers, fellas.
Thank you very much to Phil for his time whilst having his back to Alistair Cook, the disrespect. Alistair Cook, will he go to the Ashes? Is that ever going to happen? More on that later. You know, Pez, I just want to know what all this means. What does it all mean? And nothing? Just 2-1.
That's right. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it 2-1? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, what about the World Test Championship points
that's
out of
right.
this?
What does this mean for Australia?
It's such an issues-rich thing that's happened. You know, you can take any prism that you want with it.
Yeah.
Like the one that stuck out to me was how the episode sort of reveals the gaping chasm in the perceptions and expectations of the everyday fan with the lived experience of players and maybe those inside cricket. Like, I think people are trying to pass that at the moment. So, like, one, you know, outside of what you see on the field, which is invariably excellent from the players and enjoyable to watch, you know, these guys have been jumping from four-walled hotel to four-walled hotel for you know, a year and a half, from biosecure environment to managed environment now, sometimes with family, often without, 18 months of that. I think it's very difficult to put ourselves in their shoes in relation to that. You know,
Phil also made a great point just then, is that our Australian players have hardly played. And all the cricket has basically been England. And then India have also played heaps of cricket as well. So that'll come into context later when we talk about Australia and the Ashes and what's going on there. But yeah, it is sort of a bit easy to forget that it's just different teams playing, but not our team.
Yeah. And then the second one that, like, I think, you know, people are skittish in talking about too much or trying to pass, is the idea, and I think it's just true, like the primacy of the IPL is quite normalised among players, not just Indian players. You only have to see which Aussies have decided to go to the IPL and not play for their country, for example. And I'm not sure that it is among fans in certain places. I mean, it wasn't for us, you know, about 12 months ago or even less.
Agreed.
And I think the most chastening thing for fans is the idea that the Indian players wanted to leave, not just for health reasons, though there were health reasons and valid health reasons, mental health, physical health, all of that,
mm-hmm.
But for the pragmatic reason to protect their availability for the IPL. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's that big a problem, right? But I think it is for fans who aren't used to where the IPL sits in the hierarchy and what it was offering in terms of test cricket in this situation.
Yep.
Like England is used to exerting its power over others,
mm-hmm.
not having power exerted over it.
Sure.
Especially when it relates to test cricket on its home soil. I think there's understandable reasons for it, the Indian players and BCCI doing so, truly. Mm. But you can't ignore that this was truly like the raw exercise of power of one institution over another in a way that the power often does because it can.
Mm.
Like power doesn't bend to reason. Power only bends to power. And I think the tough thing for England is that they're rarely, if ever, on the receiving end of it. And for that reason, he goes, that's why I'm today declaring that more than the Gabba, more than Lords and more than the Oval, the Indians' abandonment of the Old Trafford Test is the most Asian century moment yet. It was the purest, most dramatic exercise of power we've seen because they cucked test cricket in England.
Without a ball being bowled.
Okay. And I say fair play.
Yeah.
It's not a judgment. It's a cultural exchange. I'm just here exchanging.
I mean, the lengths they went to not get Ashwin a game, honestly. He might have played that game.
I'm also looking forward to unveiling our RPL coverage next week.
That's all right. I think there's something as well, I think, mate, about, you know, like the idea of sport being like an even contest, you know, for everyone except for professionals, right? So that's like 98% of the 99.9% of the entire makeup of a sport is amateur until like that 1%, like 0.1%.
Yeah.
And so this idea that like everything should be fair. And the reason I say this is because, like, if everything was even in, like, some sort of, like, communist society, I suppose.
Yeah, utopia.
Some sort of communist utopia.
Yes.
That's not an oxymoron. That, because it was clear that the BCCI didn't want to play five tests, especially when they had to reschedule the IPL for the second half. And so they suggested playing this Old Trafford game as the first test match before the first test match was scheduled.
Yeah.
But then the ECB were like, no, we want to play the 100, right?
Yeah.
And so, of course, if everything was equal, then that just all gets sorted out, but it doesn't. And so there's this idea, there's this like this faint idea that, okay, the BCCI really didn't want to play this game, and they've sort of not confected, but they got an opportunity, they're going to take that up. And the idea of a sporting contest, as we all experience it, except for the professionals, be like, that's really unfair, but that's also just the nature because India, like, isn't it something like for every dollar that world cricket earns, like 90 cents of it comes through India, like 8 cents come from Australia and England, and the other 2 cents is made up from everyone else? Like,
sounds about right.
It's something
based on our modeling.
And you can take that to the bank, your $1 to the bank. But it's something like that. It's incredibly skewed. And that's before you even get into the monopoly of those three countries. So, you know, it is also a little bit like, well, you know, And one of the big three countries is getting a taste of what it's like for South Africa or for the West Indies. Now we're like, we've had a taste of the minutes and like, oh no, this isn't fair. I don't like this. This is bullshit.
This doesn't happen to me.
This doesn't happen to me.
I do this to others.
Exactly. Yeah. And we don't like
I'm the one who knocks.
Because usually it feels good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nice. So I suppose I really want to have like this just binary argument where I was like, no, it was this one thing and then they're doing this or they've made this mistake. They're doing like they're you know, pushing this agenda or whatever, but it's not because
it's almost like it's grey.
Yeah, I don't like
it's almost
that.
Like there's a few things you have to consider.
I don't like that. It's one thing.
Things, yeah.
One thing.
I want to be a polemicist. I want there to be one answer to one thing. I want there to be good and want there to be evil.
Yeah.
In terms of recriminations then, you know, like
So who do we blame?
So the Shastri book launch. So
is Putin involved?
It's less in, like, you don't look at the Shastri book launch in terms of trying to find a villain or a scapegoat, though some are, or an escape goat. I think what's interesting is more in terms of how India behaves as a superpower. So the Shastri book launch is interesting insofar as clearly they were bending the rules on that shit,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there are arguments that go the other way, but it was you know, there's a Shastri's got a bit of form on this sort of gear out here in Australia. Malcolm Conn's talking about not wearing a mask, all that sort of gear. And that's interesting in terms of how a superpower behaves, you know, in the face of other laws or regulations or whatever.
Sure.
You know, where they clearly have the opportunity to do what they like because the entire cricket economy is enthralled to them. I do it because I can. However, right, we can go, oh, that's India, terrible. You know, you are not being a good global or cricket citizen. But then Barney Ronay, he's right to say that they prop up Test cricket.
Yeah.
If they wanted to fuck off Test cricket, they could have done that a long time ago. Guys like Kohli don't do that, which is, you know, I think, frankly, we should be thanking him. That's why just we're joking about it. But there's a sad truth among all of this that, you know, cricket bodies look after themselves and those above them, but rarely those beneath them. And for that reason, like England and Australia can't really have any complaints about India's approach to this shit. You know, these two countries wrote the fucking book when it comes to this stuff. Like Gideon Haigh's written extensively about Australia failing and its obligations to the cricket community beneath it. And I think there's this unsaid, but there is a suggestion that, you know, India leaving somehow failed in its obligation to English Test cricket. Well, you know, that's just a double standard, really, if we hold that. We're all, you know, all the big three countries fail in their obligations to those beneath them. India just happens to be above England, and they've done what they've needed to do, and in many ways with good reason in relation to the health issue.
There's definitely something with COVID specifically where, like, I feel like for maybe for the best part of this century, 20-odd years, rounding down now, which is a weird thing. That's a new part of the Asian century. That we can all sort of like, you know, bullshit our way along. It's like, yeah, we'll play this series here. I mean, Australia's like fucked off Afghanistan like three times now, let alone before this much more viable option of, you know, not playing it. But, you know, like the nature of COVID is that, like, once you put someone's health into it, you can, you know, it's like when push comes to shove, you know, and like we're being shoved into a decision now. It's like, what's actually the most important? It's like, okay, well, this isn't anymore, you know? So I think there's something about the nature of COVID, especially where like you're really having to put, you know, your backs against the wall kind of thing and sort of, you know, flag to the mask where it's like, how much do you really want to look after Bangladesh or play in a series in New Zealand or go to the West Indies or whatever? And it's like, nah, what's actually happening is we need the money and I need it now. I'm going to look after me. That's the.
And in this case, the loser out of that was Test cricket in England, which is something that we've always put at the absolute pinnacle of the game. You know, nothing compromises that. Well, things do compromise that now, you know, but that's the truth.
If you had to guess, what's the likelihood of that fifth Test match being played?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, especially after having listened to Phil, like, it sounds like they're just, you know, both boards will get together and make a call on whatever's the most commercially rational decision is, and then they'll just put all of the marketing promotion around it. If that's two T20s or a standalone Test match for whatever reason, then they'll just do it, you know. I did like how he called it the special relationship as well. I hadn't heard that, and now I want to be in that relationship, but that's a separate finish. I have.
They should make it a testimonial sponsored by Shastri's book Stargazer.
We'll have to get him on to discuss that book good. Too.
I want to say as well at the same time that The Yorkshire racism investigation has been going for a little while, and they've been pushed and pushed. There was a government intervention actually saying that, like, they need to release these findings. And when did they decide to release those finding pairs? In between the two announcements of the game being cancelled or forfeited by the ECB of this game. So, like, they've absolutely tried to bury the findings of this investigation, which is scandalous in its own right. And I suppose, surprisingly, the language in the findings is not even particularly strong. Nothing really surprising came out of it, I suppose. You know, a lot of it did center around Azeem Rafiq, though it wasn't it wasn't just about him. It was a lot about, you know, Muslims in the area as well, and like even amateurs in the local area playing there as well. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say that, but it's extremely disappointing to like absolutely bury those findings in between the biggest news story, perhaps this year, you know, a game being cancelled on the day of a game in a Test match. Grim.
It was the language of an organisation with something to hide and more things to hide. I think Azeem Rafiq has come out on Twitter yesterday or the day before and made a few more remarks about it. He's certainly not happy with it. I wonder if it'll keep rolling on. This is what happens. You know, if they think that's a genius communication strategy to, you know, take racism, findings of racism, institutional racism out with the trash on a Friday when something else big is going on.
Yeah.
I think that's genius and it'll all go away. And then they get that result from Azeem. They might have bought themselves more press with it. You know, when you have issues like this, you've got to get it out in the open. You've got to deal with it. You know, that's when it goes away. So I'd be curious to see whether, you know, people like us or, you know, more serious news hounds pick this up and keep running with it. It sounds like they should.
Mate, it's just a it's just an entire grim news week. Which is an offset to Good News Week.
Good News Week with Paul McDermott.
Yeah, which is dimmed in the Good News Bible. This is the grim news Bible this week. Fuck, mate, it's all shit. Everything's shit.
But you can deliver an unbelievable sermon. And you can get that episode on our Patreon, patreon.com/greycricketer. We talk about unbelievable sermons.
See, capitalism, it always wins in some capacity or another. The Afghanistan test match looks all but off in relation to Australia saying that, well, if Afghanistan are not going to have a women's team, and by that they're saying that the Taliban are implementing a thing where women are not allowed to play sport, amongst many other things, in Afghanistan. And so Australia's saying, well, we ain't going to support that and we ain't going to play. So that's at least one test match gone, unless they want to play Ireland or something like that, or maybe West Australia start their own thing, start that segregation going.
Mm. September 1, CA was good to go on the test. September 9, it's pretty much done.
Yeah. It's not officially done, but I think it's pretty much as good as, unless Earl Eddings can turn the Taliban around.
I've mentioned Gideon a few times now, but he's written two pieces about this now, back to back, questioning the decision. And he kind of makes the point that this is a little bit of empty sentiment. You know, from CA, he says the Taliban are the conquerors of Afghanistan. They're not Afghanistan itself. And he says, would it not be worth providing a benighted people with a crumb of consolation, minuscule as it is? And he does pick apart a lot that sits underneath this around CA making a unilateral call not to play against Afghanistan. It's probably more of an ICC thing rather than CA doing it. What happens to other countries there? And then did you note that Tim Payne on his SEN show with Jack Rewalt, he was pretty blunt. He said, I'd imagine it's impossible to take part if teams are in the T20 World Cup, if teams are pulling out of playing against them and government's not letting them travel to our shores, how they can be allowed to play in that event is going to be very, very hard to see. And then the new captain of Afghanistan clapped back at him.
Oh, shit.
Back. On FB.
Yeah.
This shows you're either unaware of the circumstances or talking out of contradiction. You are mistreating Afghan cricket and all the gains we have obtained with hardship in the past decade. Mm. It was a long statement. I've just picked a bit out there, but that was the gist of it. Mm. And I'm just thinking, mate, like, you know, so CA and Payne, you know, trying to apply a bit of pressure to the Taliban, basically.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny to think that the Taliban might be sitting there just going, fuck, did you hear Payne on SEN?
Fuck Payne.
Payne with Jack Rewalt, you know? Better rethink the fundamental tenets of Sharia law. Payne's, you know, and, you know, because also, you know, they want to play this test, you know, if Rashid can just get into the middle order of Australia, spins a bit at Hobart, second dig.
Yeah.
I think Payne's giving the Taliban something to think about.
Give
him something to think about.
Jack upstairs here, boys. What?
That's great terms.
Yeah. I did think about this a fair bit, what's any of this going to do? Like I know it's less about what's it going to do and more what it represents, you know, like, can you support, you know, playing these nations when they're not supporting their own people sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I am too stupid to have a, you know, formed opinion on that. But at the same time, like, the ICC did give Afghanistan test status when the Taliban were in charge before, like, the women weren't allowed to play sport before, and the ICC gave them test status. So, like, so maybe Gideon's right, and that maybe it is more of an ICC thing. Like, the ICC sanction it, then.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Does CA have responsibility to be a leader there? I'm not sure. I mean,
there's a lot of blokes talking about this. I'd love to hear more from women and you know, whether that kind of sanction, you know, which is designed to apply pressure, I suppose.
That's it. Like, what's the purpose of it?
Is well received among the female cricketing community. A lot of blokes are pining about it. But maybe the move from CA is well received. You know, it's probably there's a limit to, a couple of white blokes going like, wow, well, this is actually the way you get the Taliban to move on women's cricket.
You rightfully said there's probably a limit. Probably. Let's not commit to that fully.
Of course. Well, you know, nothing can stop white guys.
A little bit of wiggle room there. give myself a bit of leeway. Well, on Tim Payne, he is also getting neck surgery today, I believe. I believe it's this morning, Tuesday. He's getting neck surgery, and now he's like a bit of a doubt for the Ashes. I think the hope is that he'd be okay, but I mean, neck surgery, anything to do with the spine, doesn't sound that good.
Yeah, and like
doesn't sound ideal.
And Pete Lawler broke this, and it was
his neck.
It's his necks. You know, if someone said, "Oh, it's just he's a calf. He's out for 6 weeks." Okay.
Yeah, okay.
He's a baby calf, but it's like a neck, and also it was one of those. It's a neck where he hasn't been able to fix it with other treatment. And so it's more of a last resort thing. It's like, how's that? How's your Gregory Peck? You know?
How's your Gregory Peck? Not his pectoral muscle.
It's my dad's hero.
Yeah.
So Atticus Finch. Yeah, the softly spoken but firm defender of the South.
Well, mate, it's all fed into this idea of like, what the fuck is this summer going to be out here? I mean, like, mate, I've been thinking about this for ages in terms of the vaccine out here, the rollout. I mean, I think we're at about 40% nationally for double jabs, so we're still a fair way behind. Yeah. But it's like
going to start to taper off, I reckon.
Yeah, by the time we get anywhere near 70, what's the new strain that comes out? The fucking Shastri strain,
mate. Waleed the other day was like, why aren't we talking about the fact there's 19 new variants in Africa and 3% of them are vaccinated? One and two, yeah, there's 19 that could be storming around. He didn't use those exact words.
Yeah.
That they would be storming around. Yeah. But, yeah.
Stormy Daniels.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly.
More Trump stuff.
Well, quite.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, and then that just feeds into like.
So the Ashes.
Feeds into the Ashes, you know.
What's like, doing?
Hey, there's a bit of. You know, there's a bit of tea leaves shit here. There's a bit of reading between the lines shit. It's starting to look grim. Like, England wants exemptions. They want resort accommodation. They want to bring their families.
Yep.
They want to do things in line with the way the rest of the world is treating COVID.
Yeah.
Where, where a year ago for them.
Yeah.
Like, that's prison out here, baby.
Yeah.
You got, where's zero risk? Yeah. Fortress Australia.
Which is actually their fault because they started the prison system.
Well, fucking oath.
Reap what you sow.
And it did contravene international law back in 1780s as well.
They can wear fucking convict clothes. They can wear black and white stripes and silly little hats.
Annex half the fucking continent. All they want to... Absolute joke. Oh, Cook's like, there's only a couple hundred of them out here. Nah, and then Arthur Phillip came out and was like, nah, I don't think so. There's fair few.
Ah, it's heaps, eh?
Yeah, there's quite a few. Go all the way to the Blue Mountains as well. You said they just lived on the coast. Why can't I see smoke signals 50Ks away?
Nah, storming around up there.
Huts and everything, fully sophisticated society, living sovereignty. Anyway, so Fortress Australia will barely let its own fucking citizens back.
Yeah.
And even then, they're locked up big style, and yet England want to come out to resort of comms. Bit of a pickle.
Mm. With families
and
stuff.
The logistical gymnastics seem to be obtaining like a higher degree of difficulty every day with this shit. Mm-hmm. And, there are England guys who won't come. Stokes seems cooked. Talk about tea leaves.
Yeah.
Every smoke signal there is like, ain't happening.
Yeah. I've read from a couple of people now that it's like he's unlikely to play this year.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, why would you go to Australia then? I mean, so now it's also like even if they do come, they can make it happen. What sort of team's coming out here?
And
you know?
Payne might have his neck injury as well, so we won't get to see Tim Payne.
Is Gregory Peck?
But, you know, then again, like Joe Burns last year, it just seems too big to fail. Except that he failed.
And he's down the side,
But Langer hugged him. So,
I mean, and they're playing less games the Big Bash, so even if that's, you know, I don't know what
you're rubbing your neck just thinking about.
No, I'm getting transferred pain from Tim. You know, transferred pain from Tim. Fuck, there's a bit going on here.
Gregory Peck.
Except none of it is cricket related. Mate, yeah, so, it's hard to get excited. It's hard to get excited. There's obviously no Archer. It's very unlikely there's Ben Stokes. What if guys who, even if, you know, they do come out, what if guys like a Josh Butler or a Bairstow? Mate, what if Joe Root doesn't play, what if Joe Root doesn't fancy it? But he's played in every single test match this year. They played heaps of test matches and bubbles the entire time. He's just had his second kid this year, isn't he?
He's had a lid.
He's had a tin lid. So, I mean, what if he doesn't want to go to Australia? Get fucking bumped by Cummins and Hazelwood for 4 months.
Mm.
You want to do that? Not really, eh? Rory Burns and captain.
Yeah, but you know what we're like. It doesn't matter who they look at. Bring Mark Stoneman out again. As long as we're bumping someone, we'll be happy. We'll be like Homer Simpson on the couch after surviving 24 hours, you know? Chips. screen blaring in the face.
You beauty.
You absolute beauty. I don't care who's bumping. Is there an English lid there? Bump him.
So I said to Phil, 5-0 sounds good to me. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck.
I can't string words together and I've had 10 beers.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're bumping someone.
Yeah. There'll be some cancellations with bushfires like there were in remember that Big Bash game a couple of years ago in Canberra? Call off for smoke.
Yeah,
they call off for smoke. Yeah. Too hot.
It's all good. All looking pretty good.
It all sounds pretty good. Okay, Pez, before we speak to Dirk Nanez to get his much more attuned perspective on these sort of things, we need to thank our dear friends, a Budgie Smuggler, at budgiesmuggler.com. Use the code CHAMP at checkout. And today, Pez, we're talking about socks.
Socks. As Lieutenant Dan said, they're the most important thing when you're in Vietnam. And even if you're not in Vietnam, which I don't think you can get to in Australia at the moment.
Yeah, you'll find a way.
You can get these Budgie Smuggler socks if you're looking at this on YouTube. That's merino wool, baby.
Nothing but the finest.
Takes away smell or some shit. What have we got here, guys? We can see some chilies on that. So, again, that's...
make of that what you will.
Yeah, well, that's a Vietnam reference.
When I went to Vietnam, I hadn't appreciated that. Well, I suppose I think cows are sacred, so there's no beef. Like, there's no beef in the sense that there's. So you're eating like water buffalo.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Was that in Vietnam? Yeah, it was in Vietnam. Yeah,
I thought I've had.
Yeah,
a lot. I thought. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm.
So and water buffalo. Let me tell you, little chewy. I'm not talking about extra.
Oh, God.
But yes, you know, because I didn't appreciate this until I started eating it. I went to Vietnam, I got a burger, okay? Because I'm a fucking uncultured idiot. No, I was sick beforehand, so and so I was expecting to eat this meat that was, you know, my experience of Western food being cattle.
Yes.
And it was not that. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Right.
That makes me sound incredibly uncultured, and I swear that it's not usually my experience and my attitudes heading to overseas countries, but it was in that trip. Okay. What are you looking up here? You look at the relationship of Vietnam to cows.
Do you eat beef in Vietnam? But it's not really.
Yeah,
it's not really helping.
No, I remember having a conversation with a dude. It's water buffalo.
Okay. Well, I don't think our Vietnamese listenership is that high, but let us know.
No, it's all in relation, isn't it?
That's right. So you can get all that stuff at budgiesmuggler.com, as well as a whole bunch of other apparel. And, you know, we are coming to summer in Australia, so if you want some swimmers, as Ed Cowan got in touch with us the other day, showing us, he used the code CHAMP.
He used the code CHAMP
and he got free shipping. So use the code CHAMP, get some shit with that, and you can do all of that. Get all of your apparel, all of your swimwear, your socks, if you will, if you need some socks.
And I will.
At budgiesmuggler.com.
Here he is, Dirk Nanez.
NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that you can stay close to your team even if you don't live in their town. Like, maybe you're a Raven who married a Seahawk who got a job in the land of the Falcons. With NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live, because you shouldn't have to change teams even if you change towns. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/presale to get $50 off.
Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refund. Subscription auto-renews.
I'll normally do a big like statistical rundown when we introduce guests, but I think Twitter's the best place to go here. I'm just going to read from his own bio. He says, apparently I'm a sax playing, Japanese speaking, Olympic snowboarding, abseiling millionaire professional backpacker with a rock solid back foot defense. I wish. He's back for his second appearance on the show. His first was all the way back in 2017, episode 10. I'm sure he remembers it fondly. It's a Victorian CSK, RCB, Delhi, Surrey, Middlesex, Somerset, Thunder, Netherlands, and other teams, and Australian international who bowled wheels, Dirk Nanez. G'day, Dirk.
Hi, I remember that first time. We were in Cricket New South Wales headquarters.
Yeah.
And I'm not actually sure how you managed to get a spot in there, in a boardroom or something like that. I reckon we were. You don't even remember it, do you?
No, I remember the conversation. I remember how we got in there. I think we just snuck in. Which says
I might be wrong. We might not have been.
We were. I think we were essentially Java. We just sort of just broke into the ground. There was no security. So that was the gist of it. Yeah.
Dirk, you know, according like as your bio shows, you're very intrepid. You know, as a person, like, how have you been managing lockdown and you know what's been your relationship to cricket through that time?
I'm born for lockdown. I love the fact that I don't have to do small talk with people. Lockdown, I've been up at the snow for the last 3 months, so it's been actually quite good. I've gotten reasonably fit. I thought I might have been blowing out a fraction, but I went for a ride the other day and I was actually the fastest I've ever done that little circuit thing. So I can't be in horrible nick, although the scales might say I am.
If we can talk about your cricketing life, Dirk. I mean, we only spoke this a while ago, but I find it interesting that a lot of people would know you as playing for the Netherlands, and you played there for about 10 minutes and your identity for still a lot of people was like, oh yeah, the Dutch bloke.
Yeah, I played for, I think it was 4 days I made it, been an official Dutch player, because I played 2 games. I played once against England, that game, and then 3 or 4 days later, we lost to Pakistan at Lord's, and then that was it.
Yeah. And I got asked you about, you know, playing the IPL as well, of which you played for RCB, you played for CSK, played for Delhi as well.
Yep.
Is that right? Played for Delhi as well. Do you find, I mean, there's the conversation this week around, you know, the relationship to the IPL and Test cricket, and did India, you know, not want to play this last game because they want to play in the IPL, or, you know, whether that's true or not, irrelevant. But the relationship for Australians specifically with the IPL, and Pez and I include ourselves in this, is that it's hardly recognized as a competition. It's just like the Aussie players go over there for a bit and they get some money and they come home. But like, you've been in it. Do you understand that Australians don't really recognize it at all?
Yeah, if it's not on the box, it doesn't happen.
Right.
So no one knows anything. And that's a pretty bad press at the start. Going about people partying and people think it's just about money, just a cash grab. Well, that's a pretty big part of it. It's life-changing.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's a big deal. But, yeah, people don't see it. And who, you know, when it first started, you had, for example, Mumbai with sky blue and bright gold uniforms. It's not exactly something we strive to wear in Australia, is it? So no one really gave a crap about it when it was on the tube. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I understand.
Can you characterise the early Wild West times in the IPL now you're talking about it, like in the sky blue and gold? Or whatever.
Yeah, the famous sky.
Whatever it is. You know, what was it like in the Wild West times of the IPL?
Well, every team had, like every club cricketer on a Saturday, every team had a couple of guys who went out on benders on a Friday night thinking they weren't going to play. And they were kind of carrying the rest of the group who were being somewhat responsible in the way they prepared for a game. That's the way it was. You had your sort of your 13th to 18th man in the IPL teams who had, they were never going to play because the bench was too deep. So you knew you weren't going to get a game, and those guys went out and did what a lot of cricketers at that age would do, getting well paid to go on a drinking trip, it seems, at some stages. But otherwise, the cricket was pretty serious. Yeah. It's a good event. You guys might be.
No, we want to go. We want to go.
Unselected so far.
Not selected. Yeah, yeah, that's right. We're in chat with CSK for a while.
got any people listening from over there? Surely.
Couple. Yeah, couple.
Is this going on video?
Yeah, that's why we're on video now.
Oh, right, okay. I just thought it was just a nice way to catch up.
Just
a couple of
ones. Is that the posters behind you?
I think that's what happened with Nick. We talked to Nick Hockley from Cricket Australia CEO. I don't think he realised we were recording on video, so he spent the whole time just looking out the window while he was talking to us.
So I need to start looking at the camera a bit more.
Sitting
here with pen and... Yeah, righto.
You look good, mate. That's all
you
right.
You guys are far more legit.
Yeah,
I've actually been working on a business. We're kind of working out how our business logo and how big to print it on our shirt. So that's why I'm walking around with sticky tape logo on my front pocket.
We're doing a video.
The battery just come out of hospital. there's all this time that cricket's lost to COVID. Like, does it leave you, you know, pining for the old days where you were a gunslinger for hire in various teams across the world, you know, rocking up to franchises, met by the smell of dried sweat and drink rub and fragile dreams permeating the dressing room. Yeah, do you hanker for those times again?
The only thing I miss, there's two things I miss. One is the games that you play in warm-up.
Yep.
That competition, which I don't have, because I'm like most players, somewhat competitive.
Mm.
And during COVID, the only other thing I need is an income. And so I miss that as well.
Yeah. Income is good.
Yeah.
What were your preferred warm-up games?
Yeah.
Well, I'd be in charge of parking the bus in defence in soccer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And otherwise, whatever can.
Could anyone?
I was never that good. I wasn't fleet of foot or anything like that. I didn't have great skill. I just was good at, you know, defending and
making your presence felt. Let him know you're there, kind of thing.
That's exactly what I did.
Mm. Yeah. If you had to guess, Dirk, about what's going to happen this summer, if you had to guess, and you have to now, is the Ashes going to go ahead? Are we going to play the Ashes this year?
Of course we are.
So definitely, it doesn't matter what team England roll out here, like it's happening. It's definitely happening.
Well, what's the alternative?
Australia versus Australia, right?
Yeah,
Sheffield. Yeah, but every other tour's gone ahead.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's been no breaches in Australia. The only chat is around people not being able to bring their family.
Mm.
You're not cancelling an Ashes tour because people can't bring family. That's just garbage. That's just saber-rattling and come on.
Mm, I like it.
So, yes, it'll go ahead. Will we play all tests at every venue as planned? Maybe with the exception of WA, but by then that's mid-January.
Yeah.
So you would hope things change by then. Maybe calling a down or two off the tube or something like that. Because the broadcasters can't go, but the players can.
More importantly,
mm.
you know, like apart from 4-1, from joint 4-1 ODI defeats at the hands of West Indies and Bangladesh, Australia haven't played any cricket this year. And half the guys missed that series that they did play anyway. They're an outside chance at best for the T20 World Cup. Afghanistan's off now. The Ashes is looking dubious, as you say. There seems to be a marriage of convenience between the players and the coach at the moment. Payne's got a neck injury. Are you excited for the summer ahead?
I'm excited to see your notes because you read that off really well. You go through these periods there where you're just rambling and then you have these succinct little 20-second blocks where you're reading out something that's clearly quite scripted and just off screen. Very professional. am I excited for the summer? No more or less so than previous years. Is the competition going to be fantastic? Oh, I don't know. We always say the England side that's coming out are going to be crap. They're the worst ever. But then Australia's not particularly fantastic at the moment either. Mm.
Does it feel like, Dirk, that we're catastrophizing? You know, the summer rose. Like you seem to come.
So does everyone.
It's very much like a boys. Just it'll just crack on. They'll play the games. Big Bash is going to be good this year. They've sorted out the final system this year, so it's going to be red hot.
Mm.
We're looking forward to the bat off and the Sheffield Shield. Year beauty quarantine. Don't worry about it, boys. The guys are going to play. Fucking 5-0. Year beauty. Is that what you're saying?
There's so much of that that goes on. Everyone, and then there's going to be the faux controversy in the couple of games. A week before, Dave Warner says blah, 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 and they'll blow it up in the press. Oh, this is a huge battle of, you know, warring parties. It's just a bloody cricket game, frankly.
Yeah, I
don't buy into all that crap. Maybe I should.
Mm.
Particularly as a broadcaster, maybe I need to buy it.
No, it's a good angle. It's the anti-buy-in angle.
Yeah.
You know? Like that's the broadcasting angle.
Let the boys play.
You said that Australia's, you know, not in a great spot either. I know you sort of, I think you were asked about Langer's position a few weeks ago as well. Just thinking about coach, I'm just keen on your view about coaches in cricket generally. like, and in the Australian system, like, you know, Langer strikes me, I'm trying not to read off my screen here, like Langer's strikes me as like, you know, he says work hard a lot, and you know, you've got to earn his respect. And then like Lehman was more like, you know, just give it a whack, everyone's calm, relaxed, but he made you feel good. And then like John Buchanan, more of a sort of a coach's coach, he was all about computers and shit, you know, that was his angle. Where do you sit, you know, in terms of what you need from a cricket coach and maybe the current cricket coach of the Australian side as well?
I think by the time they get to international cricket, the days of actually coaching technically players, that's gone. You don't need to do that anymore. Generally speaking, the best coaches are the players themselves. So I think that's the most important. I think that the coach is actually just a man manager, essentially. Put the schedule up on the board, say this is what we're going to do today, this is why we're doing it. And if players know the reason they're doing stuff, then they'll go out and do it. I don't think you necessarily have to sit there and script everything. I think that's something that has to happen at lower levels, but not at the top end.
Did you have a favorite coach in your time? You obviously played in a very successful Dutch team, famously. But you know, you obviously played in the IPO, you played for Australia, you know, you played some good cricket in your time.
Yeah.
Did you have a number one coach that you loved?
I think the best coaches were those, like I said, the man manager people. People who were good at getting everyone on the same page. Greg Shippen was outstanding. He was at Delhi and at my Victorian time, and he was sorry guys, that's not now.
Feel free to take it if you need.
No, might be something for my new work. Anyway. I'll leave that for now. He was excellent. Shippy was really good at that, getting the same number as well. They're very persistent. I've been getting a lot of calls lately, actually, from Telstra about my NBN connection.
Oh, yeah.
That's
scam.
I don't have Telstra.
No.
Right.
Anyway, I'll leave that there. Where were we? Shippy. He's a... Shippy was great at getting people all on the same page, regardless of what type of personality they were. He was excellent. And it was very fractured dressing room at times in Victoria, but we just knew that when we walked on a field, we'd belt every team we played against. And that was great. Steve Fleming was brilliant at that at CSK as well. Didn't have to deal with the sort of the fractures, I guess, but he had to deal with a lot of different personalities in there, and Donny at the top, and he was great. Just let them play. Make sure they're all good. They've got everything they need. Make sure there's no distractions from the outside world, and let the boys play cricket. That's as soon as you start having people doubt or try to micromanage or all that sort of garbage, allow influences, like particularly in franchise cricket, where you've got these outside influences of owners and stuff like that. As soon as you let them in, it goes to shit pretty quickly.
And so for a broadcaster like yourself ahead of the summer, Dirk, like, you know, how do you prepare? You know, do you just draw upon your experience of having played for so long and learning that every dressing room is the same and cricket is all the same apart from the media handbags, which are all confectional? Or do you sit down and study, take notes? Will you look at England, you know, A team, B team? Will you look at who might make the Australian team? Will you delve into the ins and outs of the Australian side, you know, in preparation for the summer? Or do you just rock up to the commentary box and just, you know, call it as you see it?
So I go through my phone in the off season and I keep writing myself notes.
Right.
Yeah. And the only stuff that I prepare for is just the little anecdote stuff. And that's all. They're the only notes I ever take. You know, a little word that I feel like I need to get into commentary. Just little jokes here and there. You know, dry quips that I sit down next to Jim and just speak garbage with him. They're the things that I write down.
Yeah.
A couple of days before, I'll go through stats and stuff. That's not why they employ me. I think the thing that they really employ me for is actually to call bullshit on people when I'm talking in the commentary box or interviewing. I think that's why I get my gig, and that I'm not a proper cricket snuff.
Yeah. You just seem to be looking at your phone just then. Were you going?
Well, I was looking at something that I thought. I was trying to find something that might be interesting for this conversation. I couldn't find anything. Oh, I've got some shopping list. I need veggie burgers, lettuce, and corn chips.
Bring tea.
That's not very good, is it? Panphobia is the irrational fear of absolutely everything. That's going to have to go in at some stage. So,
yes.
Well, that's how Australia is sort of approaching coronavirus, really, isn't it?
Depends who you are, yes. But that's right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
No.
How do you prepare for a podcast? Aside from type up notes furiously.
How do we prepare?
Well, there's an agenda. There's some watching of the cricket, some research going on.
You get in touch with friends who might have the phone numbers of people you want to contact to come onto the show. You sort of cold WhatsApp them, introduce yourself, see if they get back to you. Usually get a few blue bombers from three or four of them. Then someone might write back a couple of words. Mm.
What's a blue bomber?
Oh, just two blue ticks so that they've seen the message, but then just don't reply. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, look at that.
opened it, looked at it, not for me. Yeah.
You know, go through the media, what's Pete Lawler saying, what's Gideon saying, you know, not so much foxsports.com.au, less that, you know, and then go on YouTube comments, see what the fans are saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Write some shit down, you know, turn up.
And how the hell did you come up with me then? Scraping the barrel.
Well, like I said, I just rode past you the other day and I was like, oh, yeah, Dirk would be good for the show. I wasn't there the first time that we had you on. So, you know, it's something I wanted to do. And, you know, yeah, I wouldn't say you were sort of fifth or sixth in line for those we asked for this week. Who do we have? We tried to get Darren Goff onto the show and he kept saying yes, but he kept saying yes just after we were able to do it. So I don't know if he was sort of trying to stitch us up there.
Yeah.
And then, that was all really.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does that compare to ABC? In terms of preparation,
pretty similar, I would have thought.
Mm.
I don't have a shopping list though in my notes, so yeah.
I have a shared shopping list with Tori.
Oh yeah, nice.
She updates it, and then
yeah,
it's mainly her. So, well, on that note, Dirk, thanks so much for joining us, mate. I hope that was everything you wanted it to be. It certainly was for us.
It's been wonderful, guys. Jeez, that's a fully legit studio. I'm very impressed. Well done.
Thanks.
Thank you so much to Dirk. Thank you to Phil as well. And also thank you this week, Pez, to Manscaped, who have increased their engagement with TJC,
yeah,
it should be said. And now you get to hear about us talking about balls every week for the time being.
Not the Dukes either. Not Prince Philip's. R.I.P. Flowers are blooming, the grass is growing, and it's time to chop the weeds.
Nice.
Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim your holes safely and efficiently. I am talking about ball trimmers.
Did that say trim your holes?
Yep.
Okay.
You don't do that?
Trim my holes?
Yeah.
No. Not yet. Well, keep reading. Let's see where it's going.
Manscaped, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, have an exclusive offer for our audience. Use the code TJC to get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com. Mm. Join the other 2 million men who trust Manscaped. They're here to make sure you are trimmed and smelling nice. After all, it's time for some spring cleaning.
That's actually...
Southern Hemisphere.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, it actually is time for some spring cleaning. Mate, for me.
I'll,
but that's because we can't hire a cleaner at the moment. COVID.
She come around.
Yeah.
Trim the edges.
Oh, I've got a really good cleaner anyway.
Yeah.
Must be nice.
She come around. Can I shave your holes? Get into a different thing now. Mate, I'll be vulnerable here to you, Pez, and I'll tell you that it had been a little while between trimming of the hedges for me. You know, lockdown life, you know how it is. But I used it the other day in the shower and I was just like, this is just a revolutionary experience. I keep saying this all the time, but it's like, I'm actually surprised when you said there that only 2 million people use this in the world because, you know, knowing of Western culture, as I do,
yeah.
What I do.
Yeah.
There are a lot more than 2 million people out there.
Yeah.
of which some are men.
And we know that the stated goal of Manscaped is to penetrate the Western culture market.
The Western holes. Mm. Some holes in the market. Manscaped going to penetrate some Western holes.
Mm.
That should be the tagline.
But anything funny happened? Well, or was it just a really good groom in the shower?
Mate, it was just a really good groom. Yeah, mine lives in the shower. Got it done. And I was just thinking as it was happening, I was actually, I was thinking about the ad for Manscaped, like the ones that we do whilst doing it, because that's how my capitalist brain works. And I was like, mate, I was the guy who used scissors in the past. Yeah. About 10, no, more than that, like 20, hang on, how old am I? Yeah, 20, 15 years ago. And it's like, that is, if people are still doing that, disgraceful.
Mm. Well, some people might know.
I think people just need to take the leap. It's just a leap.
I think the idea that you can put a clipper in and around that area is scary.
True.
And we can tell you from first-hand experience, this product does not hurt you.
Doesn't hurt.
And it really wouldn't be in our interest to lie about that. You know, let's make people go and trim their balls
with a clipper gag.
And just it cuts them up to fucking ribbons.
Holy shit.
Boys, this cut me to ribbons. All sorts of legal issues there. I mean, if you apply it properly, I presume. But we've done it. I've done it many times. Yeah. It's amazing. You can you really walk out and you trim. You slim line, you're aerodynamic, you run faster, you'd swim faster.
That's right.
If you're doing that nude.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all good. What do you get? You get, there's all sorts of packages they got here and shit. Best tools to get you ready. Weed whacker. So they've also got the nose and ear hair trimmer with skin safe technology that prevents nick, like it just works, okay.
Mm.
It's got it's got a motor. I'm just looking at this. Crop preserver. So, it's got all the bells and whistles as well. If you want to get into the sort of deodorizing and stuff,
if that's how you want,
if you want to go the whole hog, basically with your hog, you can do that. There's a moisturizer there as well. Starting to get hot outside. Starting to get hot. Crucial, your balls stop sticking to your leg.
Man, bushfire season.
Crucial, so your balls stop sticking to your leg. Now, does that happen to you?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I must be on my own now. I've never had to sort of take my balls off my leg, like as though it was sticking like an adhesive.
I'm not talking about just like, oh, it's on my knee again.
Yeah.
That'd be a medical issue if that was the case.
Crop Reviver, spray on toner for your balls. I mean, look, I got this shit. I've not used
the toner.
Yeah, but it's there if you want. Saying there's options. That's like a printer, isn't it? Got a good Premier League side. You got a good bench. You know, you can use them when you need if there's injuries.
That's true.
Sometimes you need to.
Yeah, it's a squad game.
You can get your balls smelling like spring flowers.
Perfect.
So 20% off plus free shipping using the code TGC at manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor. Always use the right tools for the job. Manscaped. Cheers.
# AskTGC. Pezzy Dad.
Yep.
I
like this.
Am I reading this or you?
Oh, can I read it?
Yeah.
I had a special reaction to this one.
Go ahead.
Thanks. This is from...
It's from James.
It's from James.
It's via Patreon.
Patreon.com/GreatCrew for all that sort of shit. RCGC, dear Sam and Ian, 3 or 4 times a week in the dead of night, I am woken by my neighbour's screams of pleasure from what sounds like exhausting, active and communicative sex. Far be it from me to disparage any type of positive sexual experience. I guess this, at its core, is a noise complaint, one that the council wouldn't be interested in lest they be labelled perverts. As it turns out, I've been turned into a pervert against my will, a glum auditory witness writing to you with a sour mood. My neighbour moved into the apartment across from mine a few months ago. We occasionally run into each other and she's friendly. Our loft apartments share one wall upstairs where the bedrooms are. The walls are thick, double C. Sound doesn't usually carry at all in our complex, which is another reason her extraordinary vocal performances deserve consideration and examination. All was quiet until about 6 weeks ago when, at 2 a.m, my girlfriend and I were awoken to a cacophony of oh, 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 oh for 10 minutes. Then yes, 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 yes for 10 minutes. Finally capped off with 10 minutes of incoherent, shrill, punctuated expulsions of orgasmic pleasure. Fill your boots, I thought. However, since then, roughly 3 times a week, the sex vocals start around 2 a.m. They always wake me up and can last anywhere from half an hour to an hour. The sustained delivery of the sex vocals, loud and always extremely positive, yes, yes, etc., has pushed me into a conceptually frightening liminal space where I'm beginning to examine my own relationship to sex, sleeps, sleep, and neighbourly thoughts. The French philosopher Albert Camus says that human existence is absurd. We are intelligent beings thrust into a meaningless world where nothing matters. To live, we must manufacture our own meaning and attribute value to it. Playing cricket, for example, is the definition of absurd. To find meaning, we have to examine the structures of our reality. So I'll run a quick breakdown on mine. Sex noise always starts at 2 a.m., wakes me up, annoying. Sex noise lasts a long time. Is 30 minutes long for sex? Sex noise is a constant volume, pitch and theme. Yes. Can't even hear her partners making any noise? My thoughts and questions are, is this rude behavior, or am I just annoyed because me and my girlfriend aren't the ones waking up our neighbors with loud sex? Is my idea of sex too polite? It starts very loud and stays very loud. It seems a long time to be experiencing such a heightened stage of arousal and stimulation, and it feels a little disingenuous in its delivery. Like my grade 10 symphonic wind ensemble conductor, Mr. Bobart, used to say. All great symphonies have crescendos and decrescendos. It's not interesting unless there is sonic variation. Mm. Does she really need to be carrying on this much? Wouldn't it be funny to yell during sex like you're taking risky singles? And if you weren't in the mood, you could yell, "Not now!" How do I reconcile wanting my neighbour to have good sex, have a good sex life, but wanting myself to have uninterrupted sleep? Yours truly, James.
Oh, it's the old yes, no, wait, sorry. It's the old yes, no, wait, sorry. There is something, well, as a male anyway, it's something, what is, like, when you hear, when you think that you hear someone having sex, like, your ears, like, prick like you're, like, a bloodhound.
Yes.
And I was just trying, I was trying to equate that, and all I could think of, all I could think of is, you know when you walk past a Subway, you can smell the bread?
Yeah.
It's like, it triggers, like, a memory in you. I remember back when I was living in Sydney, a place that I lived at, it like backed onto a set of apartment buildings. And so the gap between the two buildings, like it wasn't like, you couldn't like reach out and touch each other's windows, but it was probably only about like 15, 20 meters apart. And my bedroom window, where my bedhead was, had a window there, then that backed onto like a neighbor's, the same.
Right.
Mirrored, is what I'm trying to say. Very poorly today. Can't talk today. And like, I'd never seen it before. But it was like, it was literally like 2 a.m. and then I was awake for whatever reason. And then I just hear like this, oh, oh. And I was like, but very faint because it's like from across the way. But then once you hear, like ears are pricked and I'm like, well, hello boys.
Yes.
Fill your boots.
Yes.
As James has said here. Cash in after tea.
Yes.
Just use jingoisms now. And it just sort of like, it went on to a point where I was like when I heard it, my instinct was like all the blood now rushes to your penis. Because now you're like, oh, now I'm turned on. But then it's like, but then that lasts maybe like a minute. Now I'm like, I know I'm bored of it. And then it went on for like 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes. And now I'm like, now it's just annoying because it's in the dead of night. There's no other noises except for, and it's just going on. And it's like, now I'm distracted. I can't think of anything else. I'm just hearing that. I'm focusing on her breathing patterns. I can't go to sleep. I've got work in the morning.
Yeah.
I probably didn't, but that's irrelevant. But it just went on and on and on. And it went on for, I would say close to half an hour.
Yep.
I was just like, but then like 5 minutes of like, and then stopping and then nothing. And then it picked up again.
Yeah.
And then there was like a longer gap of maybe about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then there was nothing. And then I just heard like this guy go, oh, and then it was over.
It really. Son of a gun.
Yeah.
When you hear other people having sex, it causes you to, you know, like driving past a cricket ground and watching people play cricket. You've got to have a look and you've got to compare yourself to it.
That's better.
You know what I mean?
That's better than my Subway analogy.
Well, it is.
I can smell the bread. What?
You hear people having sex and it's like, it goes on for a long time. I can see why James is like, oh, half an hour?
Yeah.
I mean, not me, actually. Like, I was just warming up with that sort of stuff. Yeah. Very giving lover.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I can see why, especially if you're asleep at 2 a.m. Mm. At first you hear sex and you're like, congratulations to everybody involved.
Yes.
And we're very happy.
To you and yours.
Very happy for them. And then when it goes on for a long time, you're like, shit. You know, you start thinking about yourself. Where am I on this score?
Really?
Especially if you're next to your girlfriend.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You're like, okay, well, you know, you probably want to get them back, don't you? You want to compete.
Oh, I say, yeah. It's like a tennis match now.
I would have thought so.
A little volley back and forth.
Yeah, depending on where your ego is with that kind of stuff. Yeah. Does she really need to be carrying on this much? Well,
if it was good.
Yeah, I think you got to stick with the fill your boots philosophy on that front. But I guess James is saying, like, he gets to the point where he's like, oh, this is starting to seem, you know, if he was in the position of the, or whoever her partner was in that situation, he'd be like, well, are you being serious about this? You know, is this real pleasure or is this disingenuous? I think it says more about James.
Yeah, as these questions often do.
Yeah.
Anon writes in. This is one that I was supposed to read a while ago, but it's called...
Hope that helps, James.
It's called Normal Brother Stuff. Boys, a decade on from my lowest moment on the cricket field, I feel sufficient time has passed to address the incident head on and try and derive some learnings from what happened. The context for this story comes from the final game of my under-13 school season. I'd gone into the season with grand visions of milestones, wickets, and gaining the respect of my peers through cricketing excellence. Needless to say, I had not delivered on these visions, but ahead of me was a chance to atone for my mediocre showing thus far against an opponent missing half of their strongest team to a geography field trip who had turned up with 9 players. We batted first, and I ticked along nicely, taking advantage of the weaker attack and setting myself nicely, bringing up my 50 in the 18th over. With a full 12 overs to accelerate and miniature boundaries allowing even someone as physically underdeveloped as I was to clear the ropes, my mind began to dream of a maiden ton with Dad there to watch and all. As a courtesy to the opposition, my dad had offered my two younger brothers as fielders to make up their 11. While they were far more talented than me, at this early stage, my size advantage was capable of masking this and allowed me to delude myself into believing I was the top cricketer in the family. With the scoreboard racing along, the increasingly disenchanted opposition turned to my youngest brother, 9 at the time, to bowl the 19th. 19th over. This was my golden opportunity, a cosmic gift sent from Mother Cricket to endow me with a maiden century. As he ran in, I eagerly backed up at the non-striker's end. The ball floated down, and I began to scamper down the pitch, already visualizing how I would deposit these leather-bound gifts over the tiny square leg boundary. As I wandered down the wicket, the straight half volley was pinged back by my batting partner. Stranded well out of my ground, I could only watch on in horror as my youngest sibling pulled out a full-length dive to snaffle the ball in his right mitt before casually hopping back to the stumps to run me out. As the opposition whooped and got around my brother, the humiliating trudge off the field allowed me time to process how disastrous this situation was. Filling the eyes of my teammates and supporting parents watching me, I did what anyone in this situation would do, smashing my helmet against my bag and throwing my bat before openly sobbing despondent tears in front of my disdainful teammates. A year on, and I'd been dropped from my rep team. My brothers had started playing for their rep teams, and I was back playing against the same school, this time with their full strength 11, and my brothers a safe distance from the ground. I arrived at the ground upbeat, eyeing up the sort of redemptive narrative arc that would ingratiate me with my teammates and reclaim some of the dignity I had lost the year before. We bowled first and tore through their lineup, reducing them to just 47. As a physically underwhelming group, we tended to stay away from getting involved with any sledging, with a notable exception being the one member of our side who overlapped with the rugby team. Unlike the rest of us, he was over 5 foot, had an abundance of body hair, and was clearly a presence-based selection. It's a presence-based selection.
I know that.
Throughout the opposition's I know those. I know exactly what that means. Throughout the opposition's innings, he had stationed himself under the batsman's nose at short mid-wicket, regularly declining the captain's invitation to move. While it was unclear what exactly he was saying to the batsman, it was clear that it wasn't entirely friendly. However, much like the oil and gas industry, we ignored the negative externalities and gleefully accepted the dividends. As the last wicket fell, we rushed into our huddle, delighted that we'd have things wrapped up by lunch. Our jubilant mood dissipated somewhat when their 6 foot quick, who was the last wicket to fall, turned and not so politely informed us that we could expect an unpleasant second innings. All eyes turned to the lone wolf sledger, who wore the remorseless grin of a man who knows he is batting 9 and will face no repercussions for his actions. Walking off, the extent of the damage became apparent, with their players angrily gesticulating in our direction, their parents furiously talking amongst themselves, clearly disparaging us, and the two coaches locked in discussion, aware that tensions looked set to bubble over. The atmosphere in our dressing room was somber as my opening partner and I padded up and prepared to head into the trenches. Our coach, an alpha rugby character himself, helpfully informed us that this would be a character-building experience. As we faced up to the first over, the abuse began. they developed a scattergun approach, drawing on physical features, presumed social background, and lack of cricketing ability for their assault. Mm. The volume and velocity of the verbals was only accelerated as wickets fell at the other end and the opposition grew in confidence. And just when I thought it couldn't get much worse, they struck psychological gold. First slip... First slip remembered I was the one whose brothers had played the year before. All my fragility and insecurities over my standing in the familial hierarchy were exposed and exploited by the cordon. I was reeling. How could I respond? Could I engineer a dismissal for myself without signalling to my teammates that I had deliberately got myself out? A fresh barb was delivered from behind the stumps. This bloke's shit compared to his brothers. In a moment of transcendent clarity, I swiveled round, adopted a pained expression and earnestly replied, I've only got one brother now, mate. They are both alive and well. An uncomfortable silence descended over the opposition, only lifting a few balls later when the keeper murmured, we shouldn't get stuck into this guy anyway. He seems nice to me. From that point, they didn't give me any chat and I ground out the remaining runs to take us to victory. As two blokes from the internet who opine on the finer details of the cricketer's mentality, does this make me a bad person? Is this simply a more developed form of the accepted verbal to and fro deployed in club cricket? Is my batting average of 17 a curse from the mother cricket for these actions or merely a reflection of my ability?
Mm. Well, thanks for that.
Thanks, Anon.
Anon.
Normal brother stuff.
I understand what it feels like to get out as a child when you expect to score runs and to throw your stuff everywhere and generally, you know, reflect upon that with great embarrassment, but it's true. It's what happened. All it means is that you care. Secondly, I'm very happy for your brother getting you out in those circumstances. I just think the underdog story is really appealing. And, you were walking down the wicket thinking about how you're going to deposit him everywhere. And he's just lobbing them down. I feel sorry for him as a little boy. And then he gets a moment of glory to get you out. You know, that would just feel so good for him. Yeah. So suck shit about that.
Yep.
Was it unethical, I guess, to infer that one of your brothers was dead so that you could get out of being sledged? No, not at all. No. I think...
But he is what you can.
Yes, there was a review into Australia's win-at-all-cost mentality recently.
Sure.
But no one talks about the flip side of that, which is, you know, they won a lot. And if it helps you win, as it did in this circumstance, then I think on the cricket field, you know, the rules don't apply. You know, it's the law of the jungle. If saying your brother is dead helps you score runs, then long live the death of your brothers. They're dead. You know, touch wood.
5-0 Australia. 5-0 Australia. That's all we've ever wanted. Thank you very much to Phil Walker at the Oval. Thank you to Dirk Nanners, wherever Dirk is. Thank you to you guys out there. Patreon.com/GradCricketer for more Patreon and hashtag RCDC Fridays every Friday, as you already know. See you guys next week. Cheers.